J.D. hated Friday evenings. The bar was packed with drunken idiots and their favorite sports team had lost. It meant a bunch of unhappy customers with little to no common sense. She swept the last of the broken glass into a dustpan. One guy had decided to smash his drink in frustration. It probably wouldn't be the only time she had to clean up a mess before her shift ended. She straightened and caught Bob's eye. He was her backup behind the bar. "I'm taking out the trash."
"I can do it."
"I want to get a little fresh air," she admitted. "I'm getting a headache."
"Go ahead. Take 5. I'll handle this."
"Thanks." She removed the plastic bag and replaced it with a new one, then lifted the trash. The back door beckoned. She picked up the pace and exited, happier the second the door closed. The noise from inside could no longer be heard. She had to cross the alley to reach the dumpster, and the narrow lane was blocked off at both ends every evening, so she didn't bother to pause to check for cars. There wouldn't be any. Deliveries were only made in the mornings. The two big gates also kept the homeless from ransacking their dumpsters and sleeping behind the bar and the stores attached to each side of it. It meant she was safe from anyone bothering her. J.D. threw the bag inside and dropped the lid. She looked up. It was a full moon. "All the crazies are out. No wonder," she muttered, thinking about her customers. They were an unusually rowdy bunch. She strolled slowly toward the back door, in no hurry to enter. Her threshold of dealing with bullshit had to be at an all-time low. One customer had already tried to lean across the bar in a sad attempt to kiss her. He'd ended up with a stern warning that he'd be cut off if he tried it again. She hadn't been talking about beers. His nuts had come to mind. She leaned against the building and closed her eyes. Lavos's image popped up. It happened often since she'd left Alaska. She thought about him more than she wanted to. He was very memorable. She hugged her waist and crossed one ankle over the other. He'd been a hell of a man, unlike the one she dealt with at work. He probably had forgotten her as soon as she'd driven away. But he'd starred in many of her dreams when she slept. Some of them had caused her to wake up with a sense of loss, while others had been of the highly sexual nature. Either way, they'd left her frustrated and missing him. It could never happen between them, though. Carr had admitted it was a big no-no for werewolves to hook up with humans. Lavos's pack would likely have a bone to pick with them, having any kind of relationship, probably one from her dead carcass. Her pocket buzzed, and she reached down, sliding her cell phone out. She opened her eyes, but didn't take the time to look at who called.
"Hello? Can you talk, or are you swamped?"
She smiled, identifying her friend's voice.
"I'm taking a break. What's up, Maria?" "I wanted to invite you to a barbecue on Sunday."
"No way. This is another setup, isn't it?"
"He's nice. His name is Mitch, and he's hot. He also has a good job, no mommy issues, and his family lives in New York, so you won't face a firing squad anytime soon."
J.D. winced. No. The last Mitch she'd met had been a killer. It was the night she'd lost her father and met up with a stranger walking around inside his body.
"I want you to be happy," concern laced Maria's voice. "I worry about you."
"I'm okay."
"Have they found the bodies?"
She tilted her head up, staring at the moon. "No, they probably never will. The entire camp washed into the river when that storm hit. It's remote up there, and they may never surface, or if they do, they won't be easy to find. It's miles of endless woods. I'm just glad my dad had parked his RV away from the rest of their camp."
"What were they looking for?"
"Some kind of tree beast," she lied. "Think of a devil in the body of a tree. Someone said they saw a moving tree walking around. I'm sure they were just drunk and it was windy." She wasn't sure if that was a legend, but it didn't matter. Her friend wouldn't waste the time to look it up.
"Why are you working? I know you already talked to your father's lawyer and the police. Megan told me she'd gone with you to do all that. She also told me the lawyer called yesterday, saying your father had left you everything. But the call was just a formality since he'd already put you on all his bank accounts. You have access to his money. He left you set for life."
"Bartending keeps me busy."
"You should take some time off to grieve. I need to stay occupied. I can't believe they let you return to work.
I didn't tell them about my dad.
JD sighed. For that reason. I understand. You want to try to keep things as normal as possible, but you've got to be hurting. Mitch is a nice guy. My husband works with him. I just can't stand you being alone. Everyone is worried about you, JD. I'm surprised you even answered your phone. I usually get your voicemail. You're bad about returning calls ever since you got back from Alaska. It's like you're avoiding us. I've had a lot on my plate. I don't want to be a downer. You just got married 4 months ago, and Tina is expecting her first baby. We love you. Come to the barbecue. Hang out with the people who care about you. We'll worry less.
She'd have to smile and act as if her life hadn't been altered in ways that could never be changed. Some guy named Mitch would be there, and Maria was about as subtle as a tank when it came to trying to play matchmaker.
I have to work, she lied. Sorry. Maybe another time. It wouldn't kill you to call in sick. I'm just not ready to deal with everyone yet. I hate pity. I know, but we should talk about holding a memorial or something for your dad.
I don't want to do that.
You plan to wait until they find his body to do it?
JD was fed up and decided to be blunt. This is why I've been avoiding calls. It's too raw right now, okay? She didn't want to admit that she decided not to hold any kind of funeral. I don't want to discuss any of this.
I'm sorry. I'm being thoughtless. Will you at least have lunch with me next week? I promise I won't bring up your dad or men in general. I just want to see your mug.
JD grinned. Only if something deep-fried and greasy is involved.
Fried mushrooms, fries, and bacon cheeseburgers?
Deal. I'll call you Monday to set up a time. Oh, I'd better get back inside before Bob sends out a search party. It's a zoo tonight.
Don't go home with any drunks.
She laughed.
Not a problem.
Love you. She ended the call and shoved her phone back inside her pocket. She pushed off the wall and almost tripped on a wooden pallet on the ground next to her. She shot it a glare and then reached for the handle of the door.
Hello?
The man's voice startled her and she spun around. No one should be in the alley at that time of the night. The other shops on the strip closed at 8, but it was well past 10. The sight of the man's pale, semi-good-looking face had mental alarm bells screaming the second she looked at him. He wore a black dress shirt and slacks. They only accented his white skin.
You're not allowed back here.
He tilted his head slightly. His eyes were a light color, probably a shade of blue or perhaps green. They started to glow and her heart pounded. That wasn't natural, and she knew what he was. A fucking vampire. Shit.
I was out for a walk along the rooftops and spotted you.
He gave a smile.
It's your lucky night, my dear. Tell me you're grateful.
He was probably trying to control her mind. She was grateful. Grateful she'd seen Lavos in action and knew how to respond appropriately.
I'm grateful.
She managed to get out. He'd kill her if he realized she was immune. It seemed safer to play along. It also meant he probably planned to bite her. Lavos said city vamps weren't killers. They just stole some blood from their victims and left them alive afterward. Dread pitted her stomach. She'd have to let the son of a bitch bite her without putting up a fight to fool him into believing he could make her forget what he'd done. It was a horrible choice to make, but she'd seen what vampires could do. There were no bars separating her from the monster now. She didn't have an assault rifle either. All she had was an ice pick tucked into the back pocket of her jeans. It was handy, since their ice machine tended to let the ice melt a little bit when the door was left open for a minute or two, then freeze it solid fast, lumping it together. She also never worked in the bar without something to defend herself. The vampire reached down and unfastened his slacks, shoving them over his thighs until they pulled at his ankles. He wasn't wearing underwear, and he had a hard-on. JD's fear intensified. So did her anger.
Drop to your knees,
he demanded. He wasn't after just her neck. It pissed her off. Does he do this to other women? Order them to blow him? What a sick pervert. Like stealing blood isn't enough. She lowered to her knees while slowly reaching behind her, lifting up the edge of her sweater to grip the wooden handle of the ice pick.
Tell me my dick is big.
She studied his dick, since it was right in front of her face. He wasn't big, or even on the average side. It explained why he felt the need to force poor women into sexual submission.
Huge,
she murmured, glancing to both sides of her without moving her head.
Open your mouth,
he hissed. It wasn't going to happen. She'd rather die than follow through with his instructions. She slid the ice pick out and fisted it tight in her hand. She had something hard for him, too, and it had a sharp tip. She lifted her chin and glared at him, adjusting her hand to her hip, hiding the weapon.
Fuck off, perv!
She rammed the ice pick into his nuts. He shrieked, throwing himself back. His pants around his ankles tripped him, and he went down hard, frantically reaching for his injured crotch. JD shot to her feet and grabbed the door, yanking it open. She saw him sit up just as she threw her body inside. The door closed, and she slid the deadbolt across. She backed up, realizing he might be able to break through it. It was reinforced to protect the bar against break-ins from humans, not super-strong vampire freaks. He could also avoid the back and enter through the front, coming after her from that direction. She reached for her phone, her first instinct to dial 911. She froze. It wouldn't work. He could just wipe the cops' minds or freeze them in place while he killed her in front of everyone. Fuck! Something hit the door, and she gasped as a crack split the painted white wood near the door jamb. A frantic search around her revealed nothing she could use to attack him with. But then, the glass fire case caught her attention. An axe and a fire extinguisher were inside. She moved quickly as the door suffered another blow from the vampire. She hoped no one inside the bar could hear it over the loud music coming from the main room. She threw up her arm and twisted her head in the opposite direction, slamming her elbow into the glass. It triggered the fire alarm the second she breached the glass. She'd forgotten it was wired to go off in case of that happening. Bob would start to clear the bar, and the fire department would be notified. Cops and firemen would arrive, but she'd probably be dead by then. It was possible that the vampire might take off. He hit the door again, and more cracks appeared in the wood. Worse, the section of frame with the deadbolt splintered. He was about to bust the thing in. She grabbed the fire extinguisher and was grateful the owner was almost anal about safety. He always kept the extinguishers filled. Some drunk smoked in the bathrooms and had caused a few small trash fires by not completely putting out the butts before they tossed them away. She removed the pin and pointed the hose toward the door. She stepped to the side and glanced at the axe, then prepared to squeeze the lever to spray the fire retardant. Two more hits, and the door was torn open. The pale freak entered. His eyes still glowed, but he'd taken the time to pull up his pants. They looked wet near his crotch, a dark stain proof of the blood she'd spilled. She hoped it hurt like hell. She let loose with the spray, hitting him in the face. She aimed for his eyes. He threw up his hand, roaring out in surprise, hopefully blinded. She pitched the entire container at him. It hit him in the chest, knocking him over since he was already off balance and scrambling backward, and he landed back in the alley. She lunged, grabbing for the axe. He was still on the ground, wiping at his eyes when she ran out the door after him. Vampires recovered fast. It was something she'd never forget. She didn't want to die, but she still paused when she raised the weapon, gripping the handle with both hands. It was gruesome to consider chopping off someone's head, regardless of the dire circumstances.
You bitch! He yelled. I'm gonna take you to my nest, and we're gonna tear you apart limb by limb. You'll die screaming.
She swung for all she was worth the second he lowered his arm and opened his eyes. He must have seen the blade coming because he jerked before she struck his neck. The sharp metal sliced through and she saw his head come off his body in that split second. Blood gushed, but then his entire body seemed to explode. Ash flew into the air,
almost like a big balloon popping, filled with the stuff. It surprised her, and she almost tripped over her own feet to jump back. The axe clattered to the ground, and she felt tears burn behind her eyelids from something irritating them. She rapidly blinked and was able to see again. Ash covered the ground where his body should have been. The wind blew, stirring some of it enough to see a dark stain where he'd bled. The ash stuck to it, looking like a gross gray and red mixture of mud. J.D. was in a state of shock as she looked down. Ash had landed on her sweater, too. Oh, fuck! She frantically slapped at her clothes, the urge to puke strong. Loud sirens penetrated her awareness, and she realized the fire truck and the police were close. How in the hell am I going to explain this? They would think she was insane if she told them a vampire had attacked her. They'd lock her up in a mental ward. Other vampires would come after her, and God only knew what else. She had to act fast. She forced her body to move as she bent, picking up the axe, the ice pick, and grabbing the fire extinguisher. She entered the bar, closing the busted door as much as she could. She set everything down and tore off her sweater, grateful she'd worn a tank top underneath. She turned it inside out and used the sleeves to frantically wipe off anywhere her fingerprints might be on the extinguisher, replacing it in the casing. The axe and ice pick had blood and ash stuck to them. She gripped both and ran into the hallway of the back area. The music still played in the front of the bar, but the tables she could see were clear of customers. She shoved at the door to the large closet where they kept cleaning supplies and scanned the top shelf. She grabbed the bleach and tossed the weapons into the small sink that sat in the corner. She doused them and then turned on the water to rinse the bleach away when the strong chemical began to sting her eyes. The sirens stopped, telling her the police had reached the front of the bar. The inside fire alarm still droned on. She replaced the near-empty bottle of bleach and used her sweater to grab hold of the axe, trying to dry it and wipe off her prints if any remained after the bleaching it had taken. The blood was gone from the blade. She shoved the ice pick back into her pocket after wiping it down, too. She yanked open a storage cabinet, shoving her sweater under a stack of bar towels, then rushed out of the closet and replaced the axe. J.D. hesitated, glancing around, trying to think of what to do next. Her mind blanked until she stared at the damaged door. The vampire remains were still out there. They might test them or something. She exited through the back door. There was a water hose a few feet away attached to the building to wash chairs and tables down in case someone puked. She turned it on and directed it at the ash. It turned into a gray mess, but she hit the blood area the most, then turned the hose elsewhere, spraying it in every direction it could reach. She also bent, took out the ice pick, and shoved it behind the wooden pallet out of sight. The back door was shoved open, and a cop with his gun drawn stepped out. He pointed it at her, and she froze, only easing her thumb off the sprayer so the water stopped. "I work in the bar," she told him. He didn't lower the gun.
"What are you doing?"
"I went to take out the trash and got a phone call from a friend. I was talking to her when I heard someone kicking at the back door and stepped out from over there." She jerked her head toward the dumpster. "It was some guy wearing a baseball cap. He went inside and then the fire alarm went off. I was afraid, but I snuck over here and grabbed the hose. He ran outside and I nailed him with water. He ran that way." She jerked her head toward the main street. "He's wet." A fireman and Bob stepped outside. Bob looked relieved.
"Thank God you're okay, J.D. I got everyone out front, but then realized you weren't there. I remembered you'd taken out the trash."
"Bless you for having good timing, Bob." The cop holstered his weapon. He grabbed his radio as he peered at the busted back door.
"I'll call it in and we'll look for the perp. Did you see his face?"
"No. He had his hat tugged low, and it happened so fast. I was terrified." She purposely tried to look confused and a little scared. It's a blur. I was just so freaked out." The fireman bent a little, frowning at the ground.
"What is this?"
It was the gray, watery mess that had once been a vampire. "Oh, that. I saw it when I came out. I think someone must have burned some boxes or something. We get a lot of homeless who try to come back here to sleep. Sometimes they'll burn stuff to keep warm or cook food. They climb the gates."
The cop walked down the alley, and the firemen returned inside. The fire alarm shut off. Bob approached her.
Are you okay?
Yeah. I can't believe some thug tried to break into the bar.
I can.
People are nuts.
Bob pulled her into a hug.
Where's your sweater? You always say you're cold with the air conditioning on inside.
I was hot outside, so I took it off.
She wasn't about to admit it was covered in vampire dust and damp from her using it to wipe down items she'd used as weapons.
Whew, what a night!
It's a full moon. He kissed the top of her head.
Never confront a robber. Damn, you could have been hurt. A hose? You think water is a weapon?
It was all I could think of.
The fireman returned.
It looks like the burglar broke the glass, trying to get the extinguisher or maybe the axe to use as a weapon in a robbery. The alarm going off probably scared the hell out of him. He didn't steal anything.
Bob loosened his hold but kept his arm around her.
I'll call the boss and we'll fix this door. The bar is closed for the night.
He gave her a squeeze.
Go home after we wrap this up.
The cop returned.
I'm gonna need a statement from you.
She nodded.
Of course.
J.D. glanced up, feeling a chill along her spine. Two men stood on a roof down the alleyway. They wore black clothing and were pale-skinned. She dropped her gaze before they realized she'd seen them, terror hitting hard. They had to be vampires. Normal people didn't hang out on rooftops, and her attacker had said he'd spotted her from one. Had they seen what she'd done? Oh, shit. She needed to get out of there before they came after her. The pervert with fangs had said he belonged to a nest. That had to mean there were more of them.
J.D. had a headache by the time the cops left, and the owner had sent out a few guys to repair the back door and frame.
She'd left the pick in the alley, not willing to go out there to retrieve it with vampires hanging around on rooftops. She could say she must have dropped it in all the confusion, if they were able to figure out it was hers. She was also grateful no one had asked why the door had been locked when she'd supposedly taken out the trash, since the guy had supposedly bust in the door. They might think of it later, but she had time to think up a lie. Bob led everyone outside when they finished and locked the front door. The repair guys walked toward their truck at the curb, talking to each other. The fire truck had gone, and so had the two cop cars.
What a night.
She looked up at Bob next to her.
You're telling me.
At least it wasn't a real fire. That's an upside. I about shit when that alarm went off. I rushed into the bathrooms, but nothing was smoking. Then I cleared the bar. One guy was so drunk I had to damn near carry him out. I'll walk you to your car.
You did good.
She moved, Bob staying next to her. He stopped at her car.
Are you okay to drive? I could drop you off at home. We're working the same schedule tomorrow, so we could ride to work together.
He looked hopeful.
You shouldn't be alone.
J.D. knew he was interested in her. He had asked her out a few times.
I'm fine, but thanks.
Oh, okay.
She withdrew her keys and forced a smile. I appreciate it, though.
Anytime. I mean that. I'd do anything for you, J.D.
She felt bad. He was a nice guy, but she wasn't attracted to him. He's no Lavos. She inwardly flinched at making the comparison.
Good night.
She unlocked her car and climbed inside, starting the engine. Bob backed up and waved. She lifted her hand and waved back. She clipped her belt with her right hand and pressed down on the brake before shifting the gear into drive. One glance in the side mirror to check for traffic, and then she pulled away from the curb. The streetlight half a block down was red, so she came to a stop. It was just after midnight, and traffic was still heavy since it was a weekend. Another car pulled up next to her, and she glanced over. It was a couple, and they seemed deep in conversation. She smiled. It looked as if they were arguing. She faced forward, staring at the light and tapping the wheel as cars passed in front of her. She glanced toward the sidewalk and almost forgot how to breathe when she met the gaze of a man standing at the crosswalk. He was staring right at her. It wasn't the fact that she'd caught the attention of a stranger that had that effect on her. It was the fact he was pale and wore all black clothes. He stepped off the curb, coming toward her car. JD's heart pounded, and she darted a look at the light. It was still red. She glanced back at the man. He was definitely coming her way. He stepped out of the painted pedestrian lines to reach her passenger door. He leaned down, and his eyes began to glow. He gripped the door handle and gave it a yank. She'd never been so grateful for a feature on her car. The locks had auto-engaged when she put it in drive, so he wasn't able to get inside. But she couldn't look away from his eyes. They were getting brighter. "Open the door," he demanded. He was attempting to control her mind. She glanced at the light, finally breaking eye contact with him. It turned green. She stomped on the gas, taking off. Her tires protested, but the car shot forward. JD trembled as she kept her foot pressed hard on the accelerator. Those vampires had to know what she'd done. She wasn't sure if he'd been one of the two she'd seen on the roof. It was possible. One thing was certain, though. They'd come after her. She glanced in the rearview mirror as she made it through the intersection. The guy in the dark clothes ran after her. He was fast, too fast, but she was able to put distance between them. She gripped the wheel tighter and ignored the speed limit until she didn't see him anymore. She took a few turns, eventually feeling safe that she'd lost him. The RV she'd gotten back from the repair shop days before came into view, and she sagged with relief. She'd quit her job in the morning. They knew where she worked. Would they learn her name? It was a grim concept. The vampire she'd killed couldn't tell anyone she was immune to mind control, but the one at the red light could. She'd refused his order to let him inside her car. "I'm in deep shit." She parked her car next to her father's RV and ran inside. She locked the door and rushed to the panel in the front. She twisted the key to bring the shutters down. The loud motor came on and they lowered, sealing the windows. It was the first time she'd used them since she'd returned home with her father's tank on wheels and had one of the damaged windows replaced. It had seemed like paranoia to think vampires were ever going to come after her once she'd left Alaska. "I'll be paranoid now, happily," she muttered. She dropped her purse on the table and took a seat. It reminded her that she needed to wash her sweater. It was balled up inside her purse where she'd snuck it earlier when she'd gotten a chance. The memory of that vampire exploding into dust made her grimace. She stood and started to strip. A shower was in order, and then washing her clothes. A slight noise startled her, and she stopped unzipping her jeans. The handle on the side door turned, but the locks held. She released the metal tab on her pants and backed up, trying to remain quiet. She reached the front and flipped on the monitors. She'd gotten familiar with the new camera setup, which she'd had replaced along with the damaged window. The man from the intersection stood outside the side door. JD's knees almost buckled. She had no idea how he'd managed to follow her home, but there was no denying the truth. He turned his head and nodded to someone off camera. "Shit," she mouthed. She lifted the remote and changed the camera feed to show the front of the RV. Two more vampires stood there. They stared at the windshield. One of them approached the driver's side door and tried it. She turned her head, looking at it, already knowing it wouldn't open for them. Locked. Her gaze returned to the screen. Another vampire arrived, and he tested the passenger door. A creak overhead had her jerking her chin up. It had almost sounded like a footstep. She changed the feed again until she found the camera that showed the roof. A woman had somehow gotten up there. She wore tight black clothing. That made a total of 5 vampires outside. The woman moved slowly to the side and jumped off. JD strained to hear anything, but it was too quiet. She stared at the screen, flipping the channels to watch them from different views. A 6th one arrived. It was another woman. All of them wore black, and they gathered near the side door. She wished she'd had sound wired with the cameras to hear what they said. They spoke too softly for her to hear them from where she stood. They split up again, surrounding the RV on all sides. One of the women knocked on the side door.
Hello?
JD sealed her lips and set the remote down. She lifted a leg and tore off one shoe, then the other. She was careful to stay very quiet as she tiptoed down the aisle to the door. She reached out and eased the bars down over the door as carefully as she could, timing her movements with the woman's knocks, hoping they wouldn't hear. The extra bolts were slid into place next. One of them made a slight scratching sound, and JD winced. The vampire knocked harder.
Hello, inside. Can you help me? My boyfriend beat me up. I just need to use your phone.
JD backed up and took a few slow, steady breaths. They couldn't break in. The shutters were down. The woman vampire pounded on the door.
Hello? I need help!
They clearly thought she'd fall for it. The strong desire to grab weapons surfaced, but she hadn't brought more ammo. The guns were useless, hidden inside the hallway closet. She could call the cops, but it might get them hurt. It would be like ordering delivery food for her unwanted visitors. She turned her head and stared at the television mounted by the front. The vampire woman wasn't alone for long. A guy with blonde hair joined her. He was new, and that meant there were now 7 vampires.
Her name is J.D. Trollis.
She could hear him speaking softly outside. She crouched down when her legs threatened to turn to jelly. They knew where she worked, where she lived, and now they had her name.
I grabbed one of her neighbors and ripped into his mind. He was very helpful.
He paused.
She moved here a few days ago and keeps to herself so far. No husband or kids that he knows of. The engine of her car is still warm, so she must be inside. He didn't see her come home, but he was watching television.
Lower your voice, the woman whispered.
Maybe she's deaf, the guy stated. I said, lower your voice, the woman repeated.
JD closed her eyes and leaned forward until her head nearly touched the door. She was tempted to press her ear against it, but what if they heard her breathing? She wasn't willing to risk it. They tried the door again, the handle wiggling. She opened her eyes and turned her head, watching the monitor. The woman lifted one foot and planted it on the side of the RV. She pulled, gripping the handle. It might have normally worked to rip the door open if it weren't reinforced. The metal creaked a little, but it didn't budge otherwise. Huff and puff, JD silently taunted. But you can't get in. JD realized in that instant that she had to leave town. They knew her name, though. Did one nest of vampires talk to others? Would they be searching for her no matter where she went? They might put word out to others to hunt her down. Lavos came to mind. He could help her. Maybe. He had before. She chewed on her lip, watching the 2 vamps on the screen softly talking just feet from her side door. They were probably plotting how to kill her. How could she find Lavos? That digger guy had fixed the RV. She'd seen the name of his business printed on his t-shirt. He'd had to come inside to start the engine and check a few things on the dash. He knew Lavos. If she could find the mechanic, he could send a message. She just had to wait for the sun to rise and then hit the road.
Chapter 10
Lavos didn't feel like being sociable. His brother depended upon him, though, to stay at his side and help host the festivities. It was the first time they were officially welcoming visitors for a social event since his brother had taken leadership. It would help strengthen the bonds between the 4 clans, something that had been lacking when Decker ruled. They were using the lodge for a meet and greet. He forced a smile as he entered the foyer, seeing some familiar faces, but a lot of new ones. His brother stood near the bar and motioned him over the second he spotted him.
This is my brother, Lavos.
Lorne looked relaxed, a group of people surrounding him.
Hello.
Lavos twisted his lips upward in a forced smile. A woman caught his attention when she reached out and ran a hand over his arm. You're single. He couldn't deny it. He'd seen her nostrils flare, so she'd taken in his scent.
I am.
She possessed big, dark brown eyes and long matching hair. Lauren was just telling us that you're his lead enforcer. She batted her eyelashes. That's impressive. He kept his muscles relaxed. She was obviously hunting for a mate with status.
Well, it's a perk of being the brother to the new clan leader.
You're being modest. Lauren shot him a look. Lavos is an excellent fighter.
The woman ran her hand up Lavos's biceps, squeezing them. He's a strong one. She stepped closer and pushed at her breasts when she shoved her shoulders back. I am looking for a mate. We should go somewhere more private and get to know each other. She was a beautiful woman, but he felt no desire to have sex. His brother would encourage a mating between the clans, but Lavos had no interest in her. He'd had that problem ever since he'd met JD. He couldn't forget her. She'd haunted his dreams for the past 2 weeks since they'd parted ways. He'd wake with painful hard-ons, wishing she were naked in his bed.
My brother has a beautiful house not too far from here. You should ask him for a tour.
Lavos wanted to kick Lorne. It was his turn to shoot him a look. His brother smiled, not upset or taking the hint when he continued to speak.
I'm mated, so now it's his turn.
The woman rubbed up against Lavos's side and leaned closer. I would love to see your home.
I have duties to perform first. I'm gonna be free later.
He didn't want to offend her by flat out refusing to take her to bed, but he silently plotted to avoid her for the rest of the day and evening. Lauren let it go and helped get him off the hook.
Speaking of, could you please find Brista and make certain she's prepared to watch all the children for the feast tonight?
Lauren addressed the others.
She's the clan caretaker for our young. We were told some guests might bring their children, and we thought it would be nice for her to entertain them. Of course.
Lavos bowed and untangled his arm from the woman.
I'll see you later.
Maya.
Until later, Maya.
He fled and yanked out his phone the moment he walked outside, calling Brista to relay the message. He knew Lauren wasn't a fan of the woman, but she was well-liked by some of the clan. Enough that it had assured her she held her position when Lauren had taken over, at least for the time being. But he doubted Lauren would ever entrust his own future children to Brista's care. Not after the way she'd mistreated Kira for being so human when they were kids. He closed his phone when the call ended and marched toward the gas station. He entered and sighed when he saw Voltai behind the counter.
Kill me, Lavos demanded.
His friend grinned.
I take it you met the delegates from the other clans and it's a bore? One of them wanted to tour my house. She's looking for a mate. My heart is bleeding for you.
His friend rolled his eyes.
I'd trade jobs with you in a heartbeat. I'd go fuck her to test our compatibility and you can clean the bathroom after you restock the shelves.
Lavos assessed the small store.
Deal.
Voltai shook his head.
I wish. I mean it. You make her happy and I'll take over here. Don't mess with me. It's cruel. I'm not.
Lavos rounded the corner.
Show me the basics of a cash register since I've never done this before.
Voltai shoved him back.
No way. Lorne would kick both our asses. It's too important that we make a good impression on our visitors. They don't trust us because of Decker. Not that we can blame them. Our previous leader was a total dickhead. Your job is to kiss ass, and mine is to make sure any humans dropping in to fill up their tanks don't decide to stroll around town.
His eyes brightened, glowing.
You're in a hurry to get where you're going, so gas up, take a piss, and hit the road. You saw nothing of interest here, and it was just a small town. It wasn't even memorable. Leave. How many vehicles have stopped so far today?
Voltai's eyes dulled in brilliance.
3. One family is sightseeing as they travel to visit an uncle. They wanted to check out Janella's store, but I told them it's closed. They'd bought some jewelry from her online. One guy was heading to a new job. He wanted in and out of here as fast as possible, so I didn't have to mess with his mind. Then there was a trucker. He's a regular, so no problem there. We're along his route, and he stops in a few times a week. That's good.
Janella was a little upset at losing prospective tourist business, but today's too important to risk someone seeing something they shouldn't. Lorne purposely planned this for midweek since the weekends bring in more traffic. The delegates will be gone quick enough, and life can resume as normal once the other clans feel comfortable with Lorne in charge. Lavos knew he needed to get back to the lodge to help Lorne give a good impression, but he lingered.
Where's Carr?
On patrol up the hill. He wrestled with Garson for the assignment and won.
Why?
There are new women in town to flirt with.
Voltai grinned.
Why else? He didn't want to be stuck doing perimeter duty. Garson was dumb enough to take that bet.
Horny bastard.
It's totally natural. Our heat cycle is coming on soon. It's better to find someone to spend it with now than have to travel around, hoping to catch the eye of some babe who isn't hooked up with someone already. Spending it alone is hellish. This is the first year that other clans might welcome us with open arms instead of suspicion that we've come to spy on them. Or worse. Anger stirred.
I'd almost forgotten that Decker sent one of our women to kill Velder's son.
It wasn't as if we knew about it until after the fact. Can you imagine? What a messed up way to get an enforcer's guard down. She got him into bed, and then tried to cut out his heart. I'm glad she failed.
Decker had no honor.
Is Lorne going to get rid of that law that prevents us from sexual contact with humans? There are a lot of hot babes a few towns over that I'd like to get to know better.
It's never safe when we interact with them.
I'm not looking to mate with one. I'd just like to be able to say yes when a cute human wants to jump my bones. It happens sometimes when it's my turn to go pick up store supplies. It just feels so damn wrong to say no. I want to make them happy, and I'm perfectly willing to use condoms.
Lavos laughed.
Only doing your civic duty to be polite to humans, right?
Hell yes. They think we're gay.
That impression keeps them from coming into our town to seek out our males.
Hey, I won't tell them where I live, and I'll make it clear it's a one-time deal.
I'll bring it up to Lorne next time we're discussing laws.
Thanks.
Lavos turned away.
I better get back to the lodge.
See you later. I'll be at the feast.
Lavos avoided the main entrance of the lodge and went in through the kitchen. It had become a hive of activity. He talked to everyone working to make sure there were no problems. Davis, Kira's father, had everything running smoothly. He had to finally return to Lorne's side. Maya ended her conversation with a tall male and came straight to him, gripping his arm.
You're back.
I made my rounds. Everything is going well.
Can you leave? I want to see your house.
She licked her lips. Everyone I've spoken to has said nice things about you. My father would approve. He wants me to find a strong mate. He had to give her points for persistence.
I'm on duty until this evening.
She pouted. Your brother is the clan leader here. I'm sure he'll be more than happy to get someone to cover for you.
He's depending on me for his support. I wouldn't ask him to do that.
He hoped she'd take the hint.
I want to test a mating. I'm attracted to you, and you're strong enough to be worthy of me.
He'd have to be blunter. He didn't want to offend her, but he wasn't gonna fuck her either. He felt no attraction.
I'm flattered, but right now isn't a good time.
Anger glinted in her eyes. I see. She released his arm.
Shit.
Lorne would kick his ass if the woman called her father to complain that someone had been rude to her.
Later tonight I'll be free.
He winked, hoping he gave the impression he wasn't flat-out refusing her offer. She rewarded him with a smile.
Business first. I respect that. I'll see you later.
She blew him a kiss and returned to the tall man she'd been speaking to before. He withdrew his phone, calling Voltai. His friend answered right away.
What's up, Lavos? Didn't I just see you?
Dressed to impress for that feast.
Are you seeing a lot of hot babes?
One. Her name is Maya. Remember it. She's beautiful and really wants to test a mating with an enforcer.
Was she running a fever? There's nothing better than sex with a woman in heat.
She's hot, all right.
Thanks.
He hung up and sighed.
Lorne caught his attention, and he had a feeling it was going to be a long afternoon. One of the men standing next to his brother was Velder, another clan leader. Velder knew they owed him. He'd supported Lorne taking over the clan from Decker. It was time to kiss some ass. He could do it. JD's shoulders hurt, and her eyes burned. It was from exhaustion. She'd spent almost 4 entire days driving with only a few hours of sleep for breaks. She reached over to take a sip of coffee. It wasn't hot anymore, but it helped her stay awake. She glanced at the top monitor on the dash. The GPS said she had nearly reached the town. I want to be there already. I thought leaving Alaska and driving home had been rough. She'd at least stopped for entire nights to sleep 6 to 8 hours that first time. She'd also pulled over to stretch her legs at rest stops. But the return trip had just been brutal. It hadn't helped that she'd started her journey already tired. It wasn't as if she'd gotten much sleep while she waited for dawn to come the night the vamps had followed her home. She dozed off for a few minutes, only to be woken by noises. They'd tried to get inside the RV all night, but had given up right before the sun rose. She'd showered to wake up some, then hooked up the trailer to haul her car. JD glanced at the dash to the second monitor, the one under the GPS. The sight of her little red car being pulled behind the RV was reassuring. She also checked out traffic. She'd been paranoid that someone would follow her, but she felt secure it hadn't happened. They would have tried to attack her at night already. She tapped the volume control embedded in the steering wheel for the CD player, heavy metal music blaring from the speakers. It helped her stay awake, too. Bone tiredness had hit about the time she'd left Canada and driven into Alaska. She was used to spending 8 hours a day on her feet tending bar, not 16 hours a day with her butt planted on a seat as she drove. Her entire body felt stiff. Digger's auto-repairing garage had been easy to locate. It was located in some tiny town she'd never heard of. She only hoped he knew how to get a hold of Lavos. She'd been certain Digger was a werewolf, too. She flashed back to meeting the big mechanic. He'd been a bit cold and distant to her, but seemed at ease with Lavos. She'd stayed inside the RV once he'd arrived, but his nostrils had flared, as if he were sniffing around when he'd come to start the engine. She'd noticed. For at least the 100th time, she reconsidered her actions. Would Lavos be annoyed that she'd sought him out for help? She just wasn't sure what else to do. He might have answers, knowing a lot more about vampires than she did. All the movie and book facts she'd learned seemed like bullshit. He could probably tell her if every nest of vampires was looking for her or if she just had to avoid Washington. It was information she needed. Otherwise, she'd never know if she was safe or not. He could also clue her into whether vampires would tell werewolves about her. The latter could come at her during the daytime. That would shoot her plan to hell to just lock herself inside the RV when the sun went down. She'd be at risk during the day, too, and she had no idea how to spot werewolves. She tapped the wheel to the beat of the music and glanced at the GPS again. She'd find out soon enough if Digger could relay a message and if Lavos would speak to her. He might be pissed. Would he kill her? She softly cursed. No, he won't do that. He kept me alive before. She also had to admit that seeing him again was something she longed to do. He wasn't forgettable in any way. She'd had a hard time saying goodbye to him. He hadn't seemed eager to let her drive off either. They'd stared at each other until his brother had ordered her to go. Lauren hadn't been rude, but he hadn't been overly friendly either. The guy frowned a lot. A sign caught her attention on the right side of the road. It stated gas was just ahead. Her heart sped up a little, and it helped her get a second wind. Some of the tiredness faded. It was possible Lavos lived in that town too, along with Digger. She might see him faster than she'd anticipated. She straightened in the seat until she got a look at her face in the rearview mirror. Her hair was a mess from opening up the windows a few times to allow air to blow inside, and her eyes were bloodshot. Great, she muttered, I look like hell.
What's new? It wasn't as if Lavos had met her at her best.
J.D. slowed when she saw the town. It was as small as the map implied, with several buildings on one side of the road. There was a gas station with a mini-market and a few tiny tourist shops. A large barn with Digger's name painted in red on the wooden side sat at the end of the strip, beyond the gas station's pumps and parking lot. She spotted another structure off the road, lurking behind the buildings and up a high hill. It had to be the biggest log cabin she'd ever seen. But it seemed to be a private home, since there were no signs near or on it. The road leading to it wasn't even in view. J.D. parked at Digger's auto repair and garage, maneuvering into the wide space beside the building. She noted the main doors were shut as she peered out her passenger side window. A closed sign was displayed. Shit. It was just her luck that he wasn't there when she arrived. She turned off the engine and glanced at the sky. It would get dark soon, but she had a bit of time. She removed the keys and unlocked the door, climbing out. Her legs protested when she put weight on them, but she ignored the achy muscles, stretching. She leaned in and grabbed her purse off the floor under the seat where she'd stored it. The gas station slash mini-mart was open. She slammed the door and hit the remote lock on the RV door, heading that way. No other customers were in the small parking lot, and she didn't see anyone inside except the clerk. He was a handsome guy in his 20s. The music inside was a little loud. He stopped sweeping the floor and grinned at her.
Hello?
He had a nice voice. Hi. He turned his head, staring out the windows.
You need gas? I don't see your vehicle.
I park next door. Do you know when Digger's auto shop is going to be open?
Are you having car trouble? I can call him. He doesn't live far.
She hadn't expected that. Thank you. That would be great.
No problem.
He set down the broom and walked over to the counter. He leaned across and lifted up the receiver of the phone. He flashed her another grin.
We'll get you up and running fast enough. Digger is magic with anything on four wheels.
He turned away and dialed. J.D. noticed a small display of hot dogs and walked over. The breakfast bars she'd eaten as road snacks had been tasteless after the first few. She started making two dogs.
We have a code red, the clerk said. A woman has car problems. Get here.
He paused.
Thanks.
J.D. was surprised at his words. Code red? She met his gaze when he hung up. He grinned again.
He's on his way.
What's a code red?
That little engine light going off, of course. It's an inside joke. You know, he's a mechanic.
Got it. She wasn't about to correct him on the car trouble. She faced the food stand and put ketchup on her dogs, then put them in their little pouches. She grabbed a bag of chips, a soda, and a candy bar. She went to the counter and set everything down. This is a small town.
Yes.
He stepped behind the cash register.
We don't get that many visitors. It's boring as hell around here.
He started to ring up her purchases. It was tempting to ask him about Lavos, but she didn't dare. Instead, she studied the man. He was a very muscular guy for a store clerk. Was he a werewolf who belonged to the pack? Did werewolves work in gas station convenience stores? Did they even hold real jobs or just run around the vast woods all day, hunting for food? She slid her hand inside her purse and pulled out cash.
Where are you heading?
I'm not sure yet. One of his eyebrows lifted.
That's an odd answer.
It was an unplanned trip. She struggled to come up with something to say that wouldn't give away too much information. Ever just want to hit the road and drive? That's what I did.
I wish.
His features relaxed.
That sounds like fun.
His nostrils flared.
You traveling alone?
She'd seen that move. He was sniffing her. Yes.
That's brave. I mean, most women don't do that. It's a dangerous world. You're safe here, but you know what I mean.
I do. She was afraid to bring up Lavos, but all those dire warnings he'd given her resurfaced. She wasn't sure if she could trust the clerk or if he'd lunge across the counter to try to kill her if he thought she knew he was a werewolf. She glanced at his name tag.
Voltai. That's a cool name. I've never met someone with that one before.
It's Russian, he mumbled. You'll find a lot of us in this area.
Ah, Russian werewolves. Or is that just an excuse for the odd name? Very cool.
Thanks.
His gaze darted down her body and then back up.
What's your name?
J.D.
What do the initials stand for?
It's just J.D., she spelled it. My parents weren't exactly the types to do the norm, including give me a name like Mary or Tammy.
Hippies? We get some of them in the summer. They come out here saying they're trying to communicate with nature or find their karma or some such shit. No offense.
She laughed. None taken.
I bet you do get some odd visitors.
This is far off the main highways.
Yes, it is. You should have stuck to them, though. The next motel is about 30 miles down the road, and it's kind of a dive.
I have an RV. I can sleep in it.
I like those.
He stepped out from behind the counter and walked to the door, peering toward Digger's.
Nice. It's a big sucker.
He came back to her.
I don't see too many women driving them.
It belonged to my father. I inherited it.
I'm sorry.
His features softened.
I'd be bummed if I lost my dad. We're close.
The front door of the store swung open and Digger came inside. He recognized her right away. His mouth fell open and his eyes widened.
Shit. What's wrong?
Voltai's voice took on a deeper tone. Digger gave her a once-over.
Nothing. This is the lady with the engine troubles?
Yes. Digger took a few hesitant steps, giving her a suspicious look.
You ever been in this area before?
He definitely recognized her. She was certain of that. He knew she had, so why did he ask? It might be because it wasn't safe to talk in front of the clerk. She'd play along. Not this town, but some of the ones nearby. Digger's dark eyes started to lighten, and he advanced fast, gripping her by her arms. She dropped her purse, stunned. He was trying to control her mind. His eyes didn't exactly glow. They were a dark, deep brown, but they looked eerie as hell with some yellow lighting them up.
Goddamn,
Digger hissed.
She wasn't supposed to come.